Welcome. You're listening to Ask the CIO, brought to you by CenturyLink. And now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Dave Bennett, the Defense Information Systems Agency's Chief Information Officer. Dave, thank you so much for taking the time to join me.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
All right. So you've been CIO since about October. So we're pushing about 8 months, 9 months now. Give me a sense. How's the transition going? Tell us a little bit about your background. Where were you before you became DISA CIO?
I've been around for a long time. I'm retired military. Been about 30 years in the military. I've been here in DISA, two separate assignments, but the one I'm on right now started back in 2003 as a Army 06 working command and control and some other acquisition programs on behalf of the agency. I've got about 20 years of experience, 20 plus years of experience doing program management work of information technology, focusing primarily on highly integrated systems such as command and control, enterprise services, and things like that. Job-wise, I've had several jobs as a senior executive. I've worked at the deputy PEO level. I've been a PEO. I've been in the office of the component acquisition executive as the vice component acquisition executive, and also as the acting CAE. And now I've moved over as the chief information officer. I think one of the benefits of having been in the agency as long as I have is I think I've got a pretty good understanding of the organization of the agency, where we're headed, the mission and functions across the agency, wherever we're located globally, and how we need to change things going forward to give the organization the capabilities they need to perform their mission regardless of where they're located.
So this sounds like this was an obvious step for you to move into the CIO role. Was it something that you were expecting, or was it kind of, sometimes you hear a story about, well, they just asked, or, you know, I kind of just applied figuring, you know, why not? Give me a little bit of background.
So this was an unexpected scenario. I had moved over into the office of the component acquisition executive, and after about 4 months in that job, General Hawkins called me in one day and asked if I would be interested in taking over the CIO position, and just kind of went from there. So I didn't apply for it. He just sort of pegged me, and I said, yes, sir, I'm ready to go.
All right, and it sounds like a pretty good move so far.
Yeah, it's probably one of the best jobs I've had in terms of exciting opportunities and satisfaction in doing the work.
Now, the last time I had the DISA CIO before your tenure on was in 2010. Obviously, a lot has changed. So I just want to catch up on a couple things that were priorities back in 2010 and just get a status check of how they're going. The first one, obviously, was the move to Fort Meade, getting the technology infrastructure ready to go. Give me a sense, how's it holding up? How's it benefiting the agency? Did everything kind of come to fruition as you guys had hoped it would?
Let me put some context to it to begin with. As you may well know, the agency, when we were down in the National Capital Region, had a very heavy Virginia population and a population in Maryland that wasn't as large. And so by moving up to the Fort Meade area, we basically brought the entire National Capital Region set of organizations and locations into one facility up here at Fort Meade. It's a pretty cool facility. It has lots of capability in it. But the reality is you still had a large Virginia population having to travel and commute on a daily basis upwards to 100, 150 miles round trip. And so part of that BRAC activity in terms of planning for the capabilities in the building was, how do you take care of the workers from the standpoint of giving them options to do things such as teleworking, web conferencing, VTC capabilities, things like that, so that you don't have to spend as much time on the road commuting? And so if you look at the infrastructure, a lot of emphasis was placed on providing a flexible infrastructure that can be reallocated as required to support the mission. So as a case in point, right now, on any given day, we probably have between 700 and 1,200 users who telework and connect remotely into the building via VPN, wherever they're at in the NCR, doing their work as if they were right here.
Let me just interrupt real quick. This is on the unclassified side, or is this even...
Yes, this is on the unclassified side of our network. Now, on scenarios like snow days, where the government tends to shut down, we continue to operate. During this past winter time frame, we had on a couple of days where we shut down, basically the government shut down, we were still working, and we were connecting with peaks of up to 4,300 users connecting into the infrastructure here, into their desktop mailboxes and capabilities, as if they were sitting right here. So nobody had to leave their homes. All they had to do is get online, and they could continue to work. And so we continue to move forward as if everybody had made the commute. Consolidating the NCR here at Meade, it was a huge plus for us from the standpoint of, in the NCR, you had to do a lot of traveling from building to building to building to go to meetings, to coordinate with others, et cetera. Being up here at Fort Meade, you have everybody in one complex from the NCR. So you really have the ability to run into folks and have meetings on the fly and bring folks together very quickly to address whatever issues, questions, or meetings you need to have to get through the daily activities and requirements. You couple that with the close proximity we have with NSA and Cybercom, and we really cut down on the amount of time we spend on the road working cyber issues between those three organizations. So proximity and teleworking and the infrastructure that was put in place here is just really brought a synergistic effect so that we can do more with less dollars, in some cases less people, et cetera, and get a higher output. The cable plant and the switching infrastructure that we put in was extremely flexible. We were able to reconfigure on the fly within the unclassified environment as well as the CIPR, the classified environment. So where you're at, if we need to reroute a VTC from one room to another, we can do that on the fly. And as I mentioned before, the use of DCO and VTC capabilities, we use those extensively throughout the campus, whether it's on the desktop at the individual's workstation or in conference rooms. We have the ability to pipe in DCO as an IP capability, or we can do ISDN VTC capabilities with large conference room type fixed site VTCs. And we can pretty much do that throughout the facility due to all the planning and the infrastructure work that was put in place up front.
I have to go back to the telework stuff. Wow, at one point, 4,300 users during the days, you know, snow days or bad weather days when maybe the government normally would shut down. Your infrastructure was built to handle that much, or have you had to kind of upgrade it as you saw more and more people were taking advantage of these remote capabilities?
The infrastructure itself was already configured to be able to handle that. We use VPN concentrators as the method for dialing into the infrastructure. We have added some additional VPN concentrators to really provide redundancy. So if one goes down, we don't have a problem in terms of being able to handle the capacity. But we have plenty of concentrators out there so that handling 4,300 is not a problem at all.
You mentioned DCO, the Defense Connect Online. There was some concern earlier on that DCO is having some troubles once sequestration kicked in and people, you know, stopped traveling as much. That's separate from what you do. You don't worry about the day-to-day DCO work. You're just using DCO more or less as a customer. Do I have that right?
Yes, and that's a really good point. As a CIO for the agency, I don't provide the enterprise services that the agency provides. I consume the service just as if I were a customer like anybody else out in a combatant command or a service. But from my perspective as the CIO, I have to ensure the infrastructure is set up and ready to go so that as someone in the agency uses our internal network, they have the ability to go out and reach the DCO enterprise service.
I think that's clear because I think a lot of people, I know my colleague Jared Serbu, our DOD reporter, had did a story on DCO and a lot of people were a little annoyed by the challenges it had. But it wasn't your fault on this one, we can say. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about some of the older priorities and we're going to get into some of your new priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Dave Bennett, the DISA Chief Information Officer.
It looks like the forecast is calling for a whole new cloud. Brought to you by CenturyLink. Get a visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions with CenturyLink, all built on a global, secure, carrier-grade network. And their custom solutions and support models are designed to enhance your efficiency every day of the week. Let their cloud infrastructure blanket you with security. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Dave Bennett, the Defense Information System Agency's Chief Information Officer. Now, Dave, before break, we're talking a little bit about the technology infrastructure and how it's holding up with the BRAC move over the last couple of years ago. And the fact is, you guys are doing so much work from a telework standpoint. My next question's got to come back to cybersecurity. Give me a sense. The last time I spoke to the DISA CIO, the steps were being taken to improve cybersecurity. It's a constant effort. I know that. And continuous monitoring is being put in place. So first, does DISA have that continuous monitoring capability in place? And second, what other steps you have been and are taking to, if you will, reduce DISA and even DoD's attack plane?
Let me tackle that answer sort of in reverse order. First off, as you mentioned, there's no one thing that takes care of cyber, and it's a constant battle. And truly, it's even an hourly battle in terms of the multitude of activities you have to do. But we are making certain that what we're doing in the agency to support the agency's networks, both classified and unclassified, is working with our mission assurance organization within the agency who has responsibility for providing cyber capabilities. And we're working with them to leverage the capabilities that they have already put out, as well as supporting them and interacting with them to help figure out what new capabilities need to come out of their organization and be early adopters of those capabilities so that we have the opportunity to sort of test run those capabilities and help the program office refine the capability, improve it, work through TTPs, techniques and procedures to leverage the capability. So being in the agency here, that's a huge plus where we sort of have the opportunity to get a leg up on seeing the new things coming out and being able to integrate those capabilities into our computing infrastructure as they come available, if not a little bit before. Another thing we're doing is we're in the process right now of consolidating all of our HBSS EPOS servers within the agency. Previously, as HBSS was implemented across the agency and DoD, a multitude within the agency were stood up in different locations, specifically supporting different groups within the agency. That worked at the time, but the reality is you end up with each organization having a different set of rules and measures in place to protect and monitor those capabilities, those networks, those devices. So we are taking the path right now of consolidating those EPOS servers into one EPOS server for the agency so that you reduce the monitoring requirement and you have a more holistic picture of the agency's computing infrastructure to see where your weaknesses are and take proactive measures to resolve the problems before they become a gaping hole for others to take advantage of. We're also going through and improving our patch management capabilities within the agency so that we can more quickly and readily put out software upgrades and patches to AIVAs and other problems with software, as well as continue to evolve the software in a more expeditious fashion and to ensure that it's being done consistently across the agency footprint. You may or may not know, but basically we provide a network that spans the globe, both NIPR and CIPR. So we have to ensure our patching capability is being executed consistently and uniformly, whether you're out in the Pacific or if you're in Europe, if you're in the Middle East, wherever you're at, we've got to make sure that the patches are being applied one and the same. And last but not least, back to your point, the continuous monitoring piece, we have been working with the mission assurance folks to adopt the continuous monitoring capability. And this summer, we are working with them to be an early adopter of their continuous monitoring capability. And we'll have that in place as an early adopter by the end of this summer timeframe.
All right, so a lot going on. I got to go back and just do a couple explainers. You talked about HBSS and EPO. I know HBSS is a host-based security system, and the EPO is what? Is that a brand name?
An EPO is basically an electronic policy device used to control the devices.
When you talk about the continuous monitoring capability, is that a capability, you said an earlier adopter, can you go into that in any detail? I know it gets sensitive because it is security. Is it a matter of dashboards? They talk a lot about configuration and asset management and vulnerability management. Is it all those pieces that are going to kind of come into place?
The capability I'm talking about is continuous monitoring risk scoring. Today, basically, you're probably familiar with the fact that there's the DIACAP and there's a variety of mechanisms in place to scan devices and understand what's the vulnerabilities on the machines. Do you have the latest patches, et cetera, et cetera. they tend to be done at points in time. And you take a look at, under the current scenario, you sort of look at your risk at periods of time throughout the year. Some cases you're looking more closely for risk. Other cases you're looking more deeply and more often in certain areas. But it's still sort of point in time views. With CMRS, continuous monitoring risk scoring, what that does is really brings in sort of almost a day-to-day look at your environment, assessing where the risks are, and taking a look at what's your vulnerabilities and getting, you know, what is your risk posture on a continuous basis, not just at points in time when you have an ATO that's due or you have some other major event due that is being used to determine whether or not your environment's at risk. So it's more of a proactive scenario to proactively look at how you're dealing with risk and what risk you have to react to on a continuous basis.
All right. I think that's something every agency is moving towards. So I think you may get a few calls after people hear that you guys are going to be an early adopter. Let's move on to another priority that was mentioned last time, the moving of internal support systems to the DISA DEX. Now, DISA DEX, my understanding, they're basically data center. Is that effort still ongoing? Tell me a little bit about how that's working.
The DEX are the DoD Enterprise Computing Centers. These are large Department of Defense level computing centers that provide capability in support of DoD mission at large. From an agency perspective, most all of the capabilities that I have responsibility for are already in a DEC in one location or another. As a part of that process, that automatically provides a COOP capability. So if, for instance, one DEC that's hosting a particular capability goes down, there's a failover capability to another enterprise computing center. So we've already moved most all of our applications in there that it makes sense to take advantage of that computing environment. And that served us very well as we have been doing that. Case in point, some of the benefits of doing that is we're able to leverage the organization within the agency that runs the DEX. They have a capability called Capacity Services, where they provide the hardware and the software as a service. So we don't have to buy the hardware or the software or the storage anymore. Basically, all we do is we pay our computing organization to provide that hardware and that software and that storage space to us as a service. So it greatly reduces my cost because I don't have to buy the hardware over and over and over. And they have built into their contract a technology refresh of that computing infrastructure located in the DEX. So it's a huge cost savings for us. It keeps us current with technology without me having to figure out when am I going to swap out my computing infrastructure, when am I going to swap out storage, etc.
And of course, if you need more storage, they can just charge you more. And same thing with going back to the security conversation. If there's a patch that needed or if there's a problem, it doesn't really fall into you. It falls into their bucket and they have to fix the whatever the situation is, right?
That's correct. They're able to, as the requirement for more computing or more storage goes up through usage, etc., all I have to do is pick up the phone, or in most cases, they're already monitoring it, and they give us the signal, say, hey, you're starting to run out of processing room. We need to add more boxes. And they're able to stand those up almost instantaneously. So it's a huge plus for us in terms of being able to manage the user load and the processing and storage requirements. Now, the other side to that is it reduces the amount of computing infrastructure I have to maintain here in the Fort Meade campus. So having those capabilities out in the DEX is huge from the standpoint of giving me greater flexibility. Now, if you go back to the discussion we had earlier about snow days, things like that are going to occur. Even power outages are going to occur. So when we get into a continuity of operations issue, having those capabilities out in the DISA DEX really takes that operational concern about what am I going to do when power goes out or snow days or whatever. It takes it off the table because the reality is now all of my capability is coming out of the DEC. All I have to do is VPN into the network, and then the network goes out to those computing locations, and we get the capability from those locations. So a good case in point is enterprise email. So when we go down, when we went down for the snow day, you had 4,300 people coming in through the VPNs, connecting to the network, and leveraging their enterprise email, which is located at a variety of different decks, hosting that enterprise email capability. And it's totally transparent to the user.
All right, very nice. Let's take a quick break. We come back, we can jump into some of your new priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Dave Bennett, the Defense Information System Agency's Chief Information Officer.
The secret to being successful is never slowing down. Your agency's mission doesn't have a pause button. And with CenturyLink as your trusted technology partner, you don't have to slow down. Their visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions are backed by dedicated responsive support. Pause button not included. To learn more about how CenturyLink keeps you up and rolling 24/7, 365, visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Dave Bennett, the Defense Information System Agency's Chief Information Officer. Now, Dave, before break, we were talking a lot about older priorities, things that you've been working on, things that you're seeing really good benefits from. Let's look forward a little bit. What do you hope to get done? What are you focusing on over the next 6 or 9 months?
First and foremost, I just want to reiterate the cybersecurity efforts that we've already got underway. That's still a priority as we go forward. So we'll continue to improve on the cybersecurity capabilities we have and just continue to apply that and push forward with new things coming out of our mission assurance organization. Another priority I've got over the next 6 to 9 months is what I call land convergence. In the agency, we have both in the NIPR, the unclassified arena, and in the classified arena, we have different networks that are out there within the agency. I've taken on the initiative to collapse those networks down into one network that would span the DISA footprint globally. So it gives us greater capability, it reduces cost of operating the environment, and again, it sort of ensures that we are applying security in a consistent fashion across the enterprise. In addition to the converging or the collapsing of the networks to one, I'm also expanding the networks on the classified side to ensure that all of the agency organizations, wherever they're located globally, have the ability to get access to the classified network and even higher networks as we go forward. So that's a big effort underway to ensure that from an agency perspective, we're giving the folks within the organization the capability to get access to the information regardless of the classification fabric they're working on. We're putting a lot of effort into moving to a virtual desktop and thin client. We've already put in infrastructure into the environment to support that. Present, we're going through and doing the analysis of all the desktop computing requirements, the applications that are being used, with the intent of virtualizing those applications within the infrastructure so that we can take all of the requirements off of the desktop and move to a thin client or a end-user agnostic type of device sitting on the desktop, whether that's a thin client or it's a tablet or it's a laptop. But take the requirement out of the equation where I've got to have a PC or a laptop physically on the desktop for the individual to be able to do their work. We just completed a pilot of a wireless network here within the campus at Fort Meade. And so over the next 6 to 9 months, my intention is to stand up a full wireless capability here at Fort Meade that will attach to the unclassified network. As a byproduct of that, we'll establish TTPs, CONOPS, architectural diagrams, et cetera, of how to implement a wireless capability that is put in policy by the CIO's office. And then we'll take that policy and all the other artifacts and give that to all the various agency organizations, wherever you're located. And if they have the capability to do it, they could then use that to stand up a wireless capability within their footprint. Obviously, that won't work in some spaces where we have organizations that are in combatant command headquarters, those types of things, they won't be able to do wireless. But if they have their own facility, their own building on a post or post camp or station somewhere, and they had the capability, they would have all the information they would need that they could stand up that wireless network, and it would automatically hook back into the DISA network and expand their footprint, if you will, in terms of doing things remotely and wirelessly in coordination with the rest of the agency users. We're heavily participating in the mobility pilot so that we can understand what value that's going to bring to that. And many of the things that we're doing right now, as I said, the virtual desktop, moving to wireless, all of those are complementary activities to support where it is we want to go in terms of leveraging mobile capabilities, mobile smartphone devices, et cetera. And not last but not least, but we're also doing some unified capability pilot activities right now where within the agency we are providing presence, awareness, point-to-point video conferencing, as well as chat capability that we would use internally to the agency and be able to tie that in with the enterprise capabilities so that if you wanted to do chat internally within the organization or if you wanted to do a point-to-point video phone call with somebody else here within the agency, you'd be able to do that. And you would still have the ability to go out to the enterprise level and take advantage of things such as DCO and use that web-based conferencing capability to interact with a larger audience.
All right, your plate is full, and I want to go back and follow up on a couple of those things. The LAN convergence is very interesting. So currently, there's multiple networks that all hook into a centralized DISA network, or is it a multiple networks that are integrated, and you're going to kind of create one big network? Explain a little more.
There are multiple networks that essentially were operating on their own on the unclassified fabric, on the NIPRNet, and they were all stood up for good reasons at the point in time by organizations to meet their organization's needs within the agency. What I'm trying to do is say, okay, we're going to move all of those users into one network that will support all of the DISA users globally. We're doing that by basically collapsing those existing infrastructures into one larger network. And through that effort, we'll then be able to take out redundant boxes and basically reduce the cost of operating the network across the agency and ensure that folks are getting the same capabilities across the agencies, as opposed to this group would have a capability and another group wouldn't, and they'd be wondering, well, why can't I have that capability?
All right, well, very nice. So unfortunately, we are out of time. Sounds like we could talk much, much longer. You have a lot going on, but that means we'll just have to have you come back on the show sooner. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today was Dave Bennett, the Defense Information System Agency's Chief Information Officer. Dave, fascinating work. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This show has been sponsored by CenturyLink. If you missed any portion of the show, you can hear it in its entirety on demand at federalnewsradio.com.
It looks like the forecast is calling for a whole new cloud. Brought to you by CenturyLink. Get a visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions with CenturyLink, all built on a global, secure, carrier-grade network. And their custom solutions and support models are designed to enhance your efficiency every day of the week. Let their cloud infrastructure blanket you with security. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.